I was going to save on time and not say anything, but I think I will say a few words. I'm up here anyway, right? So I'll approach this as an anthropologist, more of a sort of physical anthropologist, but picking up on some of the same themes, because it was very interesting hearing your comments. So bear with me for a moment. I'm going somewhere. Most of our primate cousins are very much into social grooming. So picking insects and parasites out of each other's fur. So it's a very important pastime for them. And you can actually map social organization among primates by looking at those kinds of interactions. Humans tend not to engage in social grooming. It's sometimes seen as impolite in some contexts. But what we do is conversation. And there's some serious thought given to the idea that conversation is the human equivalent. And so in human evolution, conversation, verbal expression, exchange of stories, exchange of meaning, exchange of thoughts, is a crucial turning point in human evolution that takes us out of the social grooming realm and into the sort of intellectual grooming realm. And to me, there's an interesting insight there. So you would think that the purpose of language is to communicate. And if the purpose of language is to communicate, then why don't we all speak one language? Right? Why don't we all just have one tool so that everybody can communicate and we can maximize communication? So if we think about the evolution of language and the evolution of humans, it's quite clear that communication is not the only reason why we have language. Because if it was the only reason, there would be such strong selective pressure for one language that all other languages would be completely eliminated. So why do we have many languages? And this is at the heart of what this project does. And as, you know, as an anthropologist, I see some very strong indications that one of the other purposes of language, one of the non-communication purposes of language, is the maintenance of diversity. So diversity is a good thing. Diversity is the engine of adaptation. When we face change, environmental change, social change, any kind of change, it's much easier to deal with the change and to solve unexpected problems if we already have the tools around us in our toolbox, or if we can adapt an already existing tool minimally in order to face this new challenge. If we have to come up with a whole new tool, invent something new every single time that we have a new challenge, this is very expensive, right? And the odds of failure are very high. So if we all speak the same language and we all have the same ideas, then we don't have the diversity necessary in order to face all those new challenges that keep cropping up, whether they're environmental challenges or social challenges, any challenges. The fact that we don't all speak the same language means that we maintain some barriers between intellectual networks, between networks of intellectual diversity production. And from a policy perspective, if I can make the link here to something applied, from a policy perspective, then it's a no-brainer that you need to have linguistic diversity in order to maintain these more or less isolated networks of production of ideas so that you maintain diversity to deal with challenges. What does that mean from the point of view of policy? It means you need to accommodate linguistic diversity. And if you try to reduce linguistic diversity, then you're heading for problems because you're at the same time reducing intellectual diversity. Because the stories, right? The stories in the Aboriginal communities, especially northern communities where I work, among the Cree, for example, and I'm just back from Kujuak last week, and I can tell you lots of stories get told. Everything is a story. You ask a question about anything, the answer is a story. Those stories evolve in a particular network. And if we homogenize all those networks and we homogenize all those ideas and all those stories, then we lose the diversity that we need in order to face challenges. So we need to maintain linguistic diversity, which means we need to accommodate linguistic diversity. And one of the key ways of doing that is to provide services, social services, health services, educational services, in the languages that people speak. Because paradoxically, you know, while language clearly to me is a barrier construction and a maintenance, a diversity maintenance tool rather than a communication tool, we also rely on it for communication, and there are few anxieties as strong as the anxiety of not being heard, of not being understood, especially when you're in trouble. And I see that in my role as dean of students here. I'll make a link to another part of my life. In my role of dean of students, I see that all the time. One of the biggest anxieties that I see last year in the Printemps Érable, you know, the whole student movement in Quebec, that was a massive expression of the fear of not being heard of a whole generation, a fear of not being understood. So we rely on that, especially when we're in trouble, we want to rely on language. Of course, we hope that the resources that we need to address our own personal problems are available in our restricted linguistic network. And from the point of view of government, from the point of view of policy, it is in all our interests if we make it possible for everyone to maintain their linguistic diversity, their intellectual diversity, so that we can tackle upcoming challenges as a group of groups, a group of networks, rather than one big group. You know, that's enough preaching from me. But these are just some thoughts that occurred to me as I, you know, listening to you, and that arise from some work that my students and myself are doing in our lab. You know, mainly some computer simulation work on networks of agents and how they communicate. And how they evolve over time and tackle challenges. I won't take up any more.